moving to the fourth case of the United States versus Biquette. Mr. Hamilton.
May it please the court, Robert Hamilton for the appellant. The government claims that the special verdict rendered by the jury defeats Biquette's request for resentencing. Argument 1 of the reply brief contends that Apprendi, which is a precursor to the special verdict, is inapplicable, and if it is applicable, it does not change a sentencing judge's traditional responsibility under the guidelines to determine type and or quantity of drug.
But Mr. Handelsman, how, I understand that the purpose of the finding of at least 50 grams for Apprendi purposes is different from the purpose to which it was being put here, which was a sentencing purpose of a more particularized nature. But a fact is a fact. I mean, the jury found beyond a reasonable doubt that this 50 gram threshold had been reached, and it seems extraordinary to me to think that the district court in sentencing could turn around and say, notwithstanding the finding in this very case, beyond a reasonable doubt that there are 50 grams, I'm going to find that the preponderance shows that there are not 50 grams. Seems to me people should be leaping up and making Rule 29 motions and doing all kinds of other things if they'd done it in time, if the evidence was that weak.
Well, this isn't a Rule 29 motion. Obviously.
No, I know it's not, but I'm just saying, how can you have these facts be different?
The reason is, Your Honor, is because we have to look at the purpose of the special verdict. The purpose of the special verdict is to allow a sentence over the statutory minimum.
But why should we look at the purpose? The jury is sitting there, and they're just asked a factual question. Do you have 50 grams? And they think about it, and they say, yes, we find by preponderance of the evidence that there's 50 grams. They don't really care whether the purpose is Apprendi or whether the purpose is, you know, the man in the moon. They find this fact.
Well, this is the same issue we as we put out in a footnote in the reply brief. The jury, first of all, it is the court's responsibility to determine quantity. We have the verdict form. There's a footnote in the reply brief where he analogizes this to a special verdict in a civil, a verdict of an advisory jury in a civil case.
But this isn't an advisory jury. This was a real jury.
It is an advisory, it could be considered.
It wasn't advice. There's no advice in a criminal case.
There's no advisory jury in a criminal case, but the jury in a criminal case does not determine quantity for sentencing purposes. That is the judge's responsibility. Now, the judge, our position is the judge in his or her discretion can accept or reject it, but the judge here didn't look at it that way. Didn't look at the Edwards case. It just said the jury found a quantity, and I am bound by that finding. There is nothing in the law that says a sentencing judge is bound by the jury's determination of quantity for purposes of determining a guideline sentence. The only thing the jury's verdict, special verdict, does is create the ability to sentence above the statutory minimum sentence, which would be 20 years.
But that, of course, the judge is bound by that 50 gram finding in the sense that it also puts a cap on how high he can go.
Well,
and of course, it goes 20 years, 40 years, life.
Well, it's basically the same difference. It
well,
allows
I'm just saying it binds him. It's a finding that has significance even to his sentencing decision.
Well, the judge couldn't give him an 80-year sentence.
Exactly.
That's right. But
exactly.
He is not required to accept that finding for purposes of determining a quantity. The point here, Your Honors, is that if this case was here prior to Apprendi, I feel there's no question it would be sent back for the judge to determine which of the three versions of quantities he wanted to believe. And there is nothing since the Apprendi case which changes that. The judge, under the Edwards case, the judge determines quantity. There's nothing in Edwards that says that the jury finds in a special verdict finds a large amount, the judge is bound by that.
Well, what more would you want the district court to do at sentencing? I mean, the district court mentions the special verdict form and what the jury found. And then he goes on to say, I need only find by a preponderance of the evidence that it was at least 50 grams, and I do so. He says that, I do so. But I think the jury verdict is conclusive in this matter when they made such a finding beyond a reasonable doubt. That's the second time I would say he's making an independent judgment. And then he goes through the testimony on the witness stand and the amount, and he says the court finds that this is the correct level and that in this case, by a preponderance of the evidence, the relevant conduct is at least 50 grams. I mean, what more was the district court to do? That, to me, is the district court exercising, taking into account the trial testimony and also exercising his judgment as to the amount.
Because the son testified as to three different quantities. And under this court's decision that the district court has to accept the most conservative amount when estimating quantities, Judge Reagan did not do that. He relied on the jury's verdict without considering the different amounts on direct examination at trial, cross examination at trial, and then the quantity mentioned at sentencing.
But that was a credibility determination, as I saw it. It seemed to me he thought that the son's testimony at the trial in general was more credible than his testimony at the sentencing proceeding. And it's not the first time, you know, witnesses have had different versions of stories. Trial judges can decide.
They have different versions every time you talk to them,
well,
in many cases. But
that's true. But,
he didn't say, I find this testimony on direct more credible, or a testimony on cross more credible, or a testimony at the sentencing more credible. If he had done that, we wouldn't have had an issue here. But he didn't. We have these three different versions here. And then he basically says, I'm bound by the jury's verdict.
But then what about his statement when he says, when you do the math and you give him Mr. Burkett, that's Edward Burkett, that's the son, right?
Well, the son was Austin. The defendant was the father, Edward.
Okay.
That's where he gives him the benefit of the
but
doubt.
But he gives him, and he goes on further.
He
says, I give him the benefit of the doubt, as did the probation office, and assume only 20 such sales. You still get in excess of 50 grams. So he's making that also based on the statement of the defendant himself.
But but that wasn't the smallest quantity that the son testified to. I think we laid it out on pages 26 through 28 of the brief, of the opening brief, of the different testimonies, the different quantities that the son gave, and the judge didn't pick one and say, I accept that. If he did that, then it would change the complexion of this case. But he didn't. He basically said, I am bound by the jury's verdict. On page 26, he said he sold an 8-ball maybe twice a month, something like that. Then he said he had 20 or 30 8-balls from his father over an 8-month period. On cross-examination, there was a different amount. There were different quantities. And then there was different amounts of sentencing. And we would submit to you that the court, in spite of the special verdict, he still has to pick. When you have divergent quantities like this, he still has to pick whatever quantity is and say, I find that to be the most credible. And that would be the basis for the sentence. For argument two, I will rest on the briefs. Mr. Armstead advised me that these pill boxes are the ordinary kind that you can get at Osco or Walgreens. I haven't seen them. The judge's notes or the clerk's notes of the number of milligrams is in the record. So I will rest on the briefs as to that.
Thank you. Mr. Armstead?
Good morning. May it please the court. I am Alex Armstead. I'm an assistant U.S. attorney in the Southern District of Illinois, and I was lead counsel in this case. With respect to the first argument, I believe that the special verdict in this case acts as a floor. Judge Reagan reviewed the special verdict. The jury made a finding beyond a reasonable doubt. In his sentencing capacity, he set the ceiling by calculating the additional amounts of methamphetamine that were seized from the residence on August 29th, as well as the testimony of his son, Austin Biquette. I agree with you, Judge Woods, that it was a credibility finding made by the judge with respect to the different versions that Austin testified to at trial. But I would urge this court not to accept the argument that counsel is making, which is a suggestion that the judge is forced to accept 14 to 17 and a half grams of methamphetamine. Clearly, that's not supported in this record. I really don't have that much more, but I'll be happy to answer any additional questions that this court would have.
How often do you use special verdicts in the Southern District of Illinois?
After the decision in Apprendi, we started to use them quite a bit, Your Honor, to preserve our right, just in case the testimony came out that would place the defendant at something beyond the statutory maximum.
Well, do you think there's any tension between that practice and our direction to use the most conservative estimate, as Mr. Handelsman suggests?
No, sir. I believe Mr. Handelsman is suggesting that there is some exclusive method with regard to accepting the smallest amount with conservative amount. And I don't believe that is the law in this circuit at all. I believe it's just one method that has been employed that this court has found acceptable.
Now, but a judge could disregard the special verdict, you think?
The judge certainly has the power to vacate a special verdict, but in this case it wasn't done. I believe he's bound by it, notwithstanding that.
Do you think if he vacated it, then you're back to the 20-year statutory maximum? In other words, it's vacated for all purposes? Because what we're doing here is continuing to work out the many implications of Apprendi, basically.
Yes. I'm not sure, Judge. I don't believe that the judge, if he vacated the judgment, I think in his sentence capacity, he could reach another figure.
But if the jury didn't find beyond a reasonable doubt that the threshold for a higher statutory maximum had been reached, how could you go above the default statutory maximum?
In that regard, I agree with you, Judge. It would be. I think it would be hard pressed for the judge to find beyond a reasonable or beyond a preponderance of the evidence more than 50 grams when there's been a finding.
If he set aside the
finding. Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yes, ma'am.
And if the judge felt that the finding just had no basis in the record, he or she should set it aside, right?
I believe so. If there are no additional questions, the United States was rest on its brief. Thank you.
All right, Mr. Hamilton.
Just briefly, looking at page 11 in the government's brief where they quote the judge at sentencing, the judge, Judge Reagan, did not take the most conservative estimate. He said he took the figure of 20 to 30 sales of 8 balls, and by conservative figure, he went on 20. However, Austin testified on April 25th at pages 143 and 144 as to how many sales he made, and I believe it was over an 8-month period. Yes, it was over an 8-month period. He said maybe he sold an 8-ball maybe twice. He was asked if he sold an 8-ball twice a month. He said something like that. That would come under less than 20.
So you're saying that there just is no record basis for the higher figure?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying the judge has a responsibility to pick the figure, and he should have picked the most conservative figure, which would have been an 8-ball maybe twice a month. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, it was over an 8-month period. I might be wrong on that. I'm not sure. But he should have taken the most conservative figure, which I believe would have been less than what the jury found. And I think that might have made one or two, a difference of one or two levels in the sentencing. So
Thank you, Mr. Armstead. Thank you, Mr. Handelsman. And Mr. Handelsman, a special thanks on behalf of the court for your accepting this appointment.
Thank you.